The Six Nations on Off the Ball with Vodafone. Official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. We all belong to the team of us.
You're very welcome back to Friday's Off the Ball. Brian O'Driscoll is with us in studio. How are you?
Very well, thanks.
Very well.
Really good, yeah.
Great.
Yeah, excellent.
You look great.
Thank you.
What is it?
I feel
is it
fresh.
The yoga?
I don't know. Thursday night's the new Saturday night for me. I don't know. It's becoming a bit of a habit coming in here, feeling a little under the
weather. People have been talking.
But it was well worth it. You'll be glad to hear.
Fess up, go on. You don't have to give us all the details. A Leinster old boys reunion?
It was, yeah. Dinner, we kind of try and meet up once a year. So it was the old guard, going back to the Matt Williams days. Mike Ruddock was even there for a while. Victor Costello's, Reggie Corrigan's, Emmett Byrne, amongst others. So it was a good crew.
Do you walk in with your Heineken Cup medals and go?
We don't. We're pleasant to one another. But it's a great laugh. It's always good to catch up with all of them. I suppose like everyone else, when you get to a certain age and kids come along, you know, the time you have to spend with friends and particularly old colleagues, you know, you don't barely hang out with your very, very close friends. So old colleagues, you know, you very rarely have that opportunity to meet up. So, yeah, it was regaling of stories of yonder years. It was good fun.
Do you think in 15 years time when you're the older member of the crew and you're meeting up with the younger lads that the stories will be as good?
I don't know if I'll have that meeting up crew.
No,
like it feels as though this is my crew. You know, the guys that I left behind a few years ago, yeah, I'm friendly with a couple of them, but I wouldn't envisage an en masse dinner like that. Maybe if you're celebrating a 10-year anniversary of a Heineken Cup or something. But
I guess that's like any company where when you're 21, 22, 23, they're the years you're going out, whereas by the time you're winning Heineken Cups, you're heading into your 30s.
But as well, because I started young at 20, you know, they were the core group of friends that I played for a decade with, or close to a decade. You know, obviously Dennis Hickey and Shane Horgan I'd be very good friends with. So, you know, I played for a considerable amount of time with those guys, and they're the ones that you have the best, I suppose, the deepest friendship with. Shane's living in London now. You don't get that much of an opportunity to hang out. So we'd a lot of fun last night.
You're here, that's the main thing. You're in body and some sort of mind.
I'll try and...
Do you talk rugby?
Yeah, there's a small bit of talk.
Is there an
about in-depth rugby?
Tactical analysis?
No, it's peripheral stuff, but everything and anything. From, you know, just funny things that have happened and obviously more pressing issues, what's going on with the trial up north. What people have been up to, just a catch up. So, pretty conventional, but a lot of laughs as well and lots of red wine.
It seems so. It's good to have you here. There's a lot to get through. Tomorrow night, we may well be Six Nations champions, which it's not that unlikely.
It's not that unlikely, no. Like, obviously, we have to keep our house in order and take care of the Scottish game. And if England don't at least match what our result is, irrespective if it's a straight win or a bonus point win, if they don't match it, you know, the title is ours. England will find it tough against France, there's no doubt. I don't think England are in, you know, anything like the form that got them that, you know, 24 out of 25 wins, certainly the first year of Eddie Jones.
Has Jones flogged them? Like, is that part of the issue? He says he wants them to be 20% fitter. Has he flogged them to the extent that he's almost sacrificing part of the Six Nations to ultimately in 18 months' time have them the fittest side at the World Cup?
Yeah, but isn't it,
bringing the Georgians in for scrum training mid Six Nations?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, you have to remember too that, you know, those English players play a lot of rugby. Mm. They play a lot of rugby with their clubs as well. There's not the same relationship, even though they do have, I don't know, the EYS or whatever they call their the panel where clubs are paid for usage of players, yeah, within camp, so they're not used during Six Nations. But even still, you have to think that, yes, they are a fit side, but less is more, particularly when you get to the latter part of the season as well. When you get beyond Christmas, the last thing you need to be doing is really pushing guys because there's so many miles on the clock already. They've built their base of fitness via pre-season and that massive number of games they played in the first 6 months, and now it's about tapering off. And that's why you get to, certainly when you get to the April and Mays of the year, that you know, training isn't really as much of a necessity as it is the early part of the year, because you've done so much of it and you've got, you know, you've got the miles in the bank. Then it's just about recovery and trying to make sure that you save it for the game. So if he is flogging them, and maybe, listen, maybe it's part of his grand plan for Japan 2019, but I just feel as though they look a small bit vulnerable at the moment.
Possibility almost that having come from Japan and such a very different setup with the amount of rugby the player is playing, that almost he's on a learning curve as to what sort of state player should be in at this time of the year?
Yeah, I think it's always difficult as well from a national coach's perspective, because you get players for such a small period of time. You know, you get them maybe a week or two before Six Nations, a couple of camps, you know, sporadically over the course of the calendar year, the rugby season. So you don't have that much of an opportunity to impose yourself. So when he is getting them in, he's trying to get value for money, or you know, or there's a sense of him wanting to earn his substantial salary that it's understood that he's on. It's kind of hard to know. And I would say that they just look a little bit tired now, I think, England. And I think they do look a small bit, not soft, but they look at, have a vulnerability that I haven't seen for a couple of years.
I want to talk about Keith Earls, because he's having a sensational tournament. He's also been put in front of the media a lot. He's done a lot of talking, said some interesting things. 2009, first time you played with him, what were your impressions back then?
Yeah, very exciting, very elusive runner. He was raw back then, obviously. I think he's a little bit more refined now. Well, considerably more refined, obviously has a wealth of experience, but he has appears to still have all that same athleticism that he had back then as a 20 or 21 year old.
Was he the heir apparent?
He's a great, great athlete.
Yeah.
I don't know, because I think for years he struggled to find what his best position was. You know, he played a bit of fullback on the wing, then he was moved into centre at times. So I think obviously now he's settled in the wing. I think he realises that's his best position, and Joe Schmidt realises that. And
ultimately, is he a better winger because he's had that experience in the centre at fullback?
Probably. I think you probably get a better sense. If you play in multiple positions and understand the workings of a 13 in relation to, you know, what goes on, particularly from a defensive perspective, as a winger, I think you definitely have more of an appreciation for what a 13 might be thinking in advance of you getting the ball, or in advance of making a defensive decision. And likewise, working on that pendulum with the back three, where you know, there's a need when the ball is over the other side of the pitch to work in the backfield with the full back, and then, you know, to be able to work in unison with your other winger as well. So I think he's got a great sense for how the winger needs to play and how he needs to get involved as well. He's not a winger that stays out there and waits for the ball to come to him. He goes hunting it. If the day isn't for him, or if the ball has been scarce, he'll go after it.
Do you see the Joe Schmidt influence on him?
Yeah, but I think Keith is playing his own game too. I think he probably, I don't think people have before this year or the last, yeah, particularly this year, have had a full appreciation for Keith Earls. At training, he scares people. He would absolutely rip the team apart. And, you know, a lot of the time when we were training, he mightn't have always been in the side, but, you know, when he's playing in the opposition and, you know, doing a defensive set, I can't tell you how many times, you know, he would have absolutely cut us apart.
And is that tight space stuff?
Yeah, and then it never properly presented itself, you know, on match day. You see him picking up lots of scores, and, you know, he runs in, he finishes, I always say, he's like a striker, he finishes off tries, but he still has to be there.
Yeah.
You know, he still has to put them away. But I think this year, in particular, his form has been excellent, and he's really showcasing what we've been seeing, what certainly I was watching for a training for years.
He really does seem to be in a good place in his life, being happy to sit in front of the media, talk very well, and talk honestly, saying, yeah, these are the biggest weeks of my life coming up, with the form I'm in, with the place I have in my team. Talking as well about working with Keith Barry.
Which, really interesting.
Sort of came out of nowhere. Yeah. Saying, but again, trying to get that 1% between diet, between psychology, having the visualization, just anything that works. And whatever it is, he didn't go massively into detail what he's doing with Keith Barry. But is that quite often the case?
Yeah, I think I think when you get to a point, particularly when you get into your 30s, you have a good sense of who you are and what you are and what makes you tick. And you understand your body better than anyone else, better than any strength and conditioning coach, or you understand what motivates you or what really works for you. So it's then fine-tuning that and trying to get those 1 or 2 percenters, and you particularly when you mature a little bit as well, and you know, maybe the the partying that you might have done as a 20-year-old, he's, you know, family man now, has a couple of kids, and you see him reflecting an awful lot on what's going on in the world, and I think it grounds him, and I think he's spoken openly about how much he's enjoying his rugby now, but he's able to put it all in perspective and ultimately just seeing it as a game. And yes, it is his career, but you know, he's having fun, and you can see that in his performances.
Did you have that moment of realization where actually this isn't the be all and end all?
Yeah, I think when kids come along, it's a big part of it. I think when I didn't have a eureka moment, but I think it happened when I got sick of being an also-ran, of finishing second, or being perennial runners-up, to then just get my act together. And that, I think all the stars aligned, you know, probably about 08, where Leinster got their act together. We obviously won the Slam in 09. And then the realisation that when you fix all those components and you get some success, maybe I should, let's keep hunting for those extra 1 or 2 percenters. And I think you never stop doing that. And you don't always know what it is the magic formula. I used to go and get some reflexology, and I didn't know, do you know what it was? Particularly when I had my daughter, that even that was just a 20-minute sleep. You know, so we go to a reflexologist and I couldn't stay awake for it. So it's just having a cat nap, because you don't get an opportunity to cat nap when you got a toddler at home anymore. So that afternoon snooze that you used to live by, that goes when kids come along. So even those small things, going, extra stretching sessions on your day off, just understanding the nutrition, hydration, all those small elements. If you can just improve on everything by 3, 4, 5% year on year, you're giving yourself a better chance of more success, of being a better version of yourself.
I don't know how Keith Earls came to work with Keith Barry, but generally when you're looking for that 1, 2, 3% extra, is that a personal thing you do? You're going out seeking, you're doing a bit of research, or are actually people within Leinster, within the IRFU, are they constantly opening these avenues?
It's probably a combination of the two. I think, I don't know with Keith whether he went and inquired about Keith Barry or how it came about, but it's an interesting one. It's something I haven't heard before.
Did you do a lot of visualization?
Not really. It wasn't really for me. Maybe I didn't have the imagination for it. I didn't really like playing the game over in my head too much. I was very much live in the moment stuff. In advance of the game, I never thought about it too hard. Some guys are at pains to, you know, playing over different moments or different scenarios. That wasn't for me. It was probably a little bit more instinctive, because I didn't have the appreciation for trying to work that in that manner.
Yeah, Wayne Rooney speaks very well about visualization, and he often talks about the overhead kick against Manchester City, how people thought it was the spur of the moment thing, and he's like, no, I've thought about this. I've thought about these moments, these big moments in games, at night, in bed, and also that relates to when the cross was coming in. I've actually thought about where it's going to go and what I'm going to do 10 seconds in advance. But again, everyone's different.
I think it's what you listen. You'd still have the Roy the Rovers moments in bed, like everyone else, where you dream of lifting trophies and having a big impact in important games. But with regard to the week of games where, you know, Joe Schmidt talks a lot about being in the mind gym, and that's obviously about analysis, about understanding your role. But if that's part second nature, having done all that work, it wasn't for me to overly think things through. It was, for me, that was probably a little bit too mechanical. I just wanted to be a little bit more instinctive.
All right, good stuff. Brian is going to stay with us. 53106 is the text number.
The Six Nations on Off the Ball with Vodafone. Official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. We all belong to the team of us.
You're welcome back to Fridays Off the Ball. Brian O'Driscoll is still alongside me in studio. Our Six Nations coverage on Off the Ball is with thanks to Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. We all belong to the team of us. So if you were playing outside Finn Russell, how would you approach it?
Listen, he's definitely an instinctive player. So you've got to read body language, and you have to understand that whatever has been called might be overruled with him playing heads up rugby. I suppose there's an excitement to that.
Is there an excitement for teammates to that?
Yeah, but there's also a difficulty sometimes in being on that same page. But the thing that's exciting about Finn Russell is he looks as though, even after the first couple of games where wasn't great, it didn't look as though it was weighing too heavily on him. He was still pretty relaxed. That England performance, the quality of passes, the range of passes, I think was pretty special. He was willing to throw the ball out there, risking intercept time and time again, because he backed his skill set. And he's, I think he'd be quite an exciting player. I suppose I remember Jeremy Staunton years ago playing Ireland under 21s with him, and he had this unbelievable looseness to him as well. And it was difficult at times being in the centre outside him, because you really didn't know what he was going to do. But when he did take it on and he was strong, you knew that there was going to be offloads to be had. So then you have to start picking your lines of running and anticipate where he's going to be or where the ball is going to be left.
Is it unusual that Gregor Townsend isn't trying to smash that out of him?
No. I think you can't. He's picking him because of the player that he is. You can't pigeonhole players into a particular type of 10, particularly when you look at the type of player that Gregor was himself. He was very much a heads up sort of outside half, perhaps not renowned to have the world's greatest kicking game. It was reasonable enough, but you look back to that Lions tour in 1997, you know, it was about his ability to run that back line. And it's just a game management. You can be loose, but it's also understanding you need to have a good game management at the same time. What I like about Finn Russell is it doesn't really matter where he is on the pitch. It seems as though it's all the same. He doesn't mind throwing a pass behind his own line versus, you know, where the try line's a couple of yards away. It's the same attitude. He's still going about it in the same manner, and I think he looks pretty unflappable, and it's a great quality to have, you know, considering the pressure that he was under after the first couple of games, to come out and respond the way he did with the performance against England. I think shows what sort of player he is. Everyone was writing him off, going, "Oh God, you know, Rasting have gone and signed a dud," and then he went and had a top class performance.
Is that actually the real worry for tomorrow? That look at the way he was able to respond to disappointing performances. What's he going to be like with all the confidence of putting together one of Scotland's best performances in a decade?
Yeah, I think that's the exciting thing. I think from a pundit's point of view, you want Scotland to play well, because I think, yes, we want Ireland to win and have an opportunity to win the Grand Slam, but you want them to be tested as well. And you know, if to remember, it was only a year ago that they were on the receiving end of a loss to Scotland. So they'll be remembering that, and they'll realise they can't let Scotland off to the start that they did last time out in Murrayfield. But you know, you expect quality players to back up big performance like that he did last or 2 weeks ago, in the Aviva tomorrow, and they look bullish. I think Scotland, you know, even though they've got a terrible away record, six victories in the Six Nations Championship away from home, four of them against Italy is pretty abysmal. But yet they're quietly confident, and I hope they play well, because it's going to mean that we need to deliver an even bigger performance ourselves.
Did you learn more away from home? Did you learn more about the players and to what level they were at away from home?
Yeah, of course you do. I think it's obviously miles easier when the crowd's behind you. But I think you understand who are mentally tough, who are warriors, who are in for the fight away from home, where it's, you know, the odds are stacked more against you, and who can deliver with more pressure. And there's lots of talk in the media this week about the pressure being all on Ireland. There's a big pressure on Scotland too, to after being blown away by Wales in the first game, to now go away and put that away record right.
Suddenly, if they don't turn up tomorrow, England looks like a freak result again.
It does, and you know, for credibility and for respect, you do need to you need to go away from home in Six Nations. And yes, they'll always get good respect in Murrayfield, because it's a tough place to go and play. But you got to go on the road, and if you want to do something, and they have aspirations, I'm sure, to top the pool in the World Cup, in our pool next year, they've got to go and win and make Ireland realise that, you know, they're a side to be reckoned with in advance of going to Japan.
Mm. Last year was a disaster start for Ireland, and it was a very difficult day for Gary Ringrose, probably the most difficult day of his career so far. He's thrown back in, needs most, Henshaw's out, Farrell's out. Ringrose has played very little rugby, 6 games so far this season. Are you surprised that he's gone straight back into the team at 13?
Not really. Do you know what? Ireland are very lucky, and he's also very lucky, considering Robbie Henshaw was probably on for a man of the match performance against Italy, having scored a couple of tries before his injury, playing very well. Then Farrell came and has a man of the match performance against Wales. So for Robbie Henshaw to get in off the back of, you know, 2 injuries is pretty fortuitous. I think he is Ireland's number 113. But it's very hard to drop a man of the match, and it would have been interesting to see what Joe Schmidt would have done with Ringrose back in the mix. I think it's him plus one, probably him and Henshaw are the partnership for a World Cup next year. But you know, Joe Schmidt's talking about how sharp he's been in training. You know, good performance against the Kings, albeit not the world's greatest opposition, but he's a very, very exciting player to be able to bring back into the fold, and I think it's a better fit for Ireland with him at 13.
It is yet another new centre partnership for Ireland, the 25th since Joe Schmidt took the role, and the constant changing is that part of the reason for the lack of creativity, for the lack of attacking quality at times from Ireland?
Yeah, obviously there's no continuity there. You in a perfect world you have stability, you've got that stability at halfback, but you know, for multiple reasons, largely injury, there's been a lot of change in there. I think if Joe Schmidt is picking from a full deck, I think he's probably thinking Henshaw and Ringrose as his centre pairing, but you know, it's such an attritional game now.
Has Aki not done enough?
I listen, it's very close. There's no doubt. It's close, but you know, who do you? Maybe it's going to be a case of horses for courses as well. And he looked at the confrontational style that they played against Wales. They really decided to take them on. I think there was a bit of a lack of creativity there, but there was a lot of go forward from Farrell and Aki. Aki's, you know, gotten over the try line a couple of times in the last 2 games. He's been pretty good. Few unforced errors the last couple of games as well. But he's been very good defensively, very solid. So it's a lovely position to be in, to have 4 centres of that calibre, you know, Farrell, Aki, Henshaw and Ringrose. But I just think when you are getting all 4 of them available at training, I do think that Ringrose offers something that none of the others do.
You didn't have too many occasions where Gordon Darcy wasn't alongside you, but from Joe Schmidt's point of view, getting to that sort of level of understanding, and maybe the way the modern game has gone, you never get that sort of run of 2 centres again, but would he prefer to be in a position heading into a World Cup where actually, rather than having competition and constant changing, he has 2, he sticks with them?
It's just that you, I suppose, if you're going to get through a full World Cup with with centres fit. You would want a run of games with those in advance. It's also for the outside backs having an understanding of passing technique from a Henshaw versus a Ringrose versus an Aki. Everyone has a slightly different style. Some players, you know, will want their wingers. Some centers will want their wingers to hold a little bit more depth and throw it out in front of them. Yeah, obviously the quality of pass of one versus the other, there's always going to be, you know, slightly more impressive passers. Although all four of them are pretty proficient. So it is just a case of getting timing and getting comfortable continuity and understanding how a player works and how your lines of running will be favoured off particular individuals.
I guess ultimately as well, Henshaw and Ringrose should get that at Leinster as well over the next 18 months where they get that little bit of time together. Are Scotland just going to be looking at Ireland and Ireland's defensive problems and what Andy Farrell has been working on probably over the last couple of weeks and think, let's just test them early on. Let's just see how much work they have actually been able to do. Let's see how much they have been able to fix.
Yeah, I'm interested to see what Ireland's line speed is going to be like tomorrow from early on. It's, you know, it's been in the last 20 minutes, in particular of the last two games, that they've conceded their tries and those wide plays. The first try against Wales, the Shingler try was a poor defensive read. That's easily fixed. The second one, you know, was good play from Scott Williams, and Fergus McFadden can't hit in and then not stop the ball, and he'll know that as well. So they're ultimately two individual errors rather than system errors. Okay. So they're easier fixed, you know, than if there's major system malfunction. I think it's just about the continuity of players defending together, trying to make sure that they get the speed on the width, make sure they don't have, you know, a number of front rowers or tight five defending in the wider spaces.
Because you touched on that before, Wales, were they better at that?
Yeah, I think they were a bit better, but the two tries that they got a little bit narrow on that a Shingler try, and that's why Stockdale tried to solve the problem when, you know, he could have waited for Aki to push him out, and maybe they could have worked on a bit more of a push. He tried to slam the gate closed. But I think I want to see if Ireland are able to ramp it up in the outside channels like England are capable of doing, where Joseph and Theo and their wingers seem to really be pressing hard and discouraging the opposition from throwing the pass. And that's half the battle. I'd like to see a little bit more aggressive line speed in the wider channels.
What does that come down to? Is that confidence within the system?
It is, yeah.
Understanding your role?
Yeah, but it's getting the personnel capable of doing that. Ringrose is a very good defender. He's a very good tackler, but also a very good defender, where he's able to problem solve on his own. He can shoot occasionally. He very rarely makes an error when he decides to shoot. It's, you know, his timing on that is very, very good. So a lot of the time it's just about presenting a picture. So playing up really hard, but then with the ability to be able to play off soft as well. So if I'm an outside half and I look out to throw a skip pass and I see, you know, some green blurred image, you know, in my eye line, there's a good chance I'm going to tuck or maybe go with a shorter pass or maybe go back inside or have a go myself. And that's what England are doing. It's almost scare tactics. And that's why Scotland had the success against them, because Finn Russell was still willing to throw those passes and risk the occasional intercept.
Right. We were talking on last night's show about the dynamic within the camp over the last couple of weeks, because we spent so much time talking about the Monday morning review and Joe's relationship with the players and how harsh he can be at times with the players. Whereas we don't really talk about Joe's relationship with his own coaches. And he did come out over the last couple of weeks and say, listen, Andy Farrell is world class. Mm. We don't know what's been said behind closed doors. And the sort of analysis goes on within the coaching. Do you ever get any sort of insight into that?
Joe likes to... He oversees everything, but he has a hand in everything as well. As much as Andy Farrell's defensive coach, Joe has a big part to play in how that system is going to operate. He's not someone that fully delegates and goes, right, that's your component.
Yeah. So he's not turning around after the game going, I can't believe we're not doing this.
Yeah, exactly. So he's very heavily involved in it, in formalizing how exactly we're going to defend, how we're going to attack, what the backline's going to do. Maybe to the degree he'll leave Richie Richie Murphy to the kicking with the boys, maybe Greg Feek with the scrummaging, but certainly, you know, with the forwards, with Simon Easterby, and you know, he takes ownership of the backs himself, and with Andy Farrell, he is very heavily involved. So I just don't think he's someone that's capable of allowing others to do it. I think he feels as though maybe he can do the role the best, so that's why he plugs himself into the system. Listen, it's hard to argue with them with the success he's had over the last 6 or 7 years.
Their conversations when they're working through all this, are they very public in front of the team, with the team?
Is no, I think they're largely, because you have to you have to give credibility to your coaching staff. You have to back them up. So I think they're behind closed doors. No, you can't undermine them. So as much as and Andy Farrell will, yes, he'll still have his own angle on things, but you know, he won't be saying anything new in team meetings that Joe Schmidt hasn't already heard in a coach's meeting in advance of that.
Mm. Are we spending too much time talking about backlines and Sexton, Russell, when actually maybe the Irish pack just go out and destroy the Scottish pack?
I thought, do you know what? And that's ultimately what it'll come down to. I read in the Irish Times, I think Gavin Hastings was talking about how the Irish pack, or the Leinster pack, dismantled Glasgow in the European Cup, and how that's his concern. I wonder, with Dev Toner in there, they're obviously a small bit worried about the Scottish line out. So is that why his selection is there, where, you know, at 6'10", if you throw it to a certain spot, if the throw is accurate, no one can get up to that, to where he can reach. So I think there's probably something in there. Obviously also, maybe they feel that Henderson doesn't have, you know, 60 in him. He might, you know, just, he's there from an impact perspective.
And with England coming in a week's time.
Yeah, you would anticipate that. Again, a bit like the centre pairing, if he's everyone to choose from, that I think that second row pairing now looks like Ryan and Henderson in advance of the World Cup in 18 months.
We had a few texts in after you were in last weekend asking about the breakdown and about the difference between the two referees, between Nigel Owens and between Wayne Barnes. And a lot of people are just wondering, like, how that can happen, how there can be such a difference between two referees at international level. Is it the good teams, the well-prepared teams, that actually come to terms with that and use it to their advantage?
Yeah, it's when you analyse the opposition, you also analyse the referee. So today, at some point, probably before the captain's run, the lads would have gone into a team meeting, and they would have done 10-15 minutes on the referee, on Wayne Barnes, on, you know, four or five things that he'd be particularly hot on. There's all likelihood that he'll blow a penalty in the first 30 seconds, 45 seconds of someone not rolling away, because that's what he's going to want. He wants to lay down the law. And he will call Rook an awful lot sooner than Nigel Owens. I thought, you know, John Barkley had a field day and he played the referee brilliantly. He's a canny player too, is John Barkley.
So he's smart enough to
very, very smart player. So he'll realise too what he can and can't get away with Wayne Barnes. And you'd anticipate that they probably won't go after as much ball as they did against England as a result of who's refereeing the game.
We are pretty much done for time. We're going to have to listen to some of the great insights that the lads managed to produce over in the Pig and Whistle in New York last night. That's a quality hour of radio coming your way next. What's your prediction then?
I think we'll win. I think it'll be tough. But I wouldn't rule out the possibility of four tries, just because you get a sense that both teams will be capable and probably will score tries. So I fancy us. It's hard to know by what. I'm not sure what the spread is, but I fancy us kind of probably by maybe 10 points. And I actually hope England go and win, because I want to go over to Twickenham and
everything
pick
on
up
the line.
Yeah, because I think, not that it adds more motivation, but there's extra spice for us when there's more at stake, and when England can upset us, and it'll be all the sweeter when we do a job on them in Twickenham.
All right, good stuff. Go home, get some sleep.
I will do exactly that.
The people
that
watching ITV won't put up with this.
No, that's why I did Thursday night, not Friday night.
Great stuff as always, Brian. Our Six Nations coverage on Off the Ball is with thanks to Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. We all belong to the team of us. Plenty more rugby to come in the next hour.
The Six Nations on Off the Ball with Vodafone. Official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. We all belong to the team of us.